I'm Christopher Granger. I'm a cardiologist at Duke University. And on behalf of the American College of Cardiology, I'm delighted to be talking with Professor Robert Eckel, who's been a professor at University of Colorado for some time, ever since I was there with you, Bob, as a resident, and is in a particularly interesting and informed position right now to discuss the topic that we're addressing, which is how can we improve the care of patients who have type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease, including using the drugs which have relatively recently been shown to have such an important effect on reducing cardiovascular outcomes and were originally developed as anti-hyperglycemic drugs. And Bob, as I said, it's particularly interesting to have your perspective as someone who was both president of the American Heart Association and now president of the American Diabetes Association. And I'd be interested in you just starting out on your perspective about how this has unfolded and how exciting this time has been.
Well, Chris, it's bringing back fond memories about our time together as when you were house officer and I was a junior faculty then at the University of Colorado Hospital. And your career has been admirable going forward, and I really have had fun kind of watching all your accomplishments. You know, having the privilege of serving the AHA as president was a surprise to me. I was not really desiring or intending to be president of the AHA. It was just the timing where obesity, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes became really increasingly important to the cardiologist. And I think since the mid-90s or even after the year 2000, I was president in 2005, I think this whole area now has evolved to the extent that we need to think about how we're going to train physicians to be able to do some of both and do it well. So, and now president of the ADA, the time is really appropriate for diabetes advances in science and medicine. We still have major unanswered questions in diabetes that relate indirectly to cardiovascular disease, but clearly are important in the natural history of type 2 diabetes. So it's been a privilege. I say I cross-dress as a preventive cardiologist, but I'm really just trained and board certified in endocrinology and metabolism. So it's been a lovely track, and I'm hoping it continues into the near and hopefully more distant future.
Well, terrific, Bob. So we have these series of clinical trials that really emanated from the FDA calling for evidence that new drugs to treat hyperglycemia for patients with diabetes had cardiovascular safety. And then we were delighted and maybe even somewhat surprised to see that there was not only safety, but there was really substantial cardiovascular benefit from two classes of drugs, from the GLP-1 receptor agonists. And those trials, not all of them showed benefit, but several of them did. And then the SGLT2 inhibitors, including with the really dramatic benefits seen in the EMPA-REG trial, where amongst the effects on the composite cardiovascular outcomes, there was also a 32% reduction in all-cause mortality and an over one-third reduction in heart failure events. So we also saw in DAPA-HF with dapagliflozin, even in patients who didn't have diabetes, whether or not patients had diabetes, very important benefits for a population of patients with heart failure with dapagliflozin. But a lot of us are still somewhat uninformed, let's say, about the mechanisms of action and how those mechanisms might relate to the benefits we see for cardiovascular outcomes. And I'd be interested in your perspective on that.
Well, Chris, us all began with EMPA-REG, which I think was a real eye-opener for both the cardiology community and the metabolic or diabetes community. This trial really began kind of a cascade and domino effect of clinical trials that would prove efficacious in terms of using drugs approved by the FDA for the treatment of diabetes and their kind of unexpected benefit in people at risk for cardiovascular disease. And I think that's a really important point to make up front. I think these drugs, we don't yet know whether or not they're beneficial for people who are at lower risk. And I think the clinical trials have been appropriately designed and implemented for people who had existing disease or were at very high risk for disease. So back to your question about mechanisms, I think we are still kind of in a cave there, Chris, in terms of how these drugs confer benefit. I think the simplest explanation for the SGLT2s is most of the benefit on cardiovascular disease, death, and ultimately all-cause mortality relate to their impact on people who have HFrEF as shown by DAPA-HF or possibly HFpEF. I, you know, as an endocrinologist, consider HFpEF as really a syndrome. You know, it's kind of like the metabolic syndrome. We in metabolism have been criticized left and right about the metabolic syndrome, but you know, it's interesting now over 80,000 papers have referred to the metabolic syndrome. So we know the metabolic syndrome is really an important concept, but HFpEF is an important concept too that I'm not quite sure what the benefit of these drugs is going to be, but how do they work? And I think, you know, initially there's the diuretic effect, which clearly relates to the glucuric effect. And as you block glucose reabsorption in the proximal tubule, you carry a lot of sodium with you, and ultimately, that affects plasma volume effectively. You know, you get a modest increase in hematocrit, a little hemoconcentration, but you also get related effects that relate probably to the diuretic effect initially, but long term, we see modest reductions in blood pressure. We see less potentially long term effects of glucotoxicity, exactly what that is, I think we could debate. There's also some benefit on inflammation that seems to be modest, but yet may confer part of the benefit. But I think from the cardiologist perspective, I think we're really seeing good evidence that these drugs improve cardiac function. And that includes both preload and afterload. And I think makes the heart more efficient in its capability of pumping that blood that the systemic circulation really needs. So I think the mechanisms here are a little bit unclear, but yet the benefits are there. And I think for the practicing cardiologist, she or he don't really need to understand the mechanisms. They just need to get more comfortable using these particular drugs. Now, for the GLP receptor agonist, I think here we're dealing with a little bit more complicated scenario. I mean, the GLP-1 receptor agonists work by probably modifying mostly glucagon secretion by the pancreas. And this is kind of what we call the paracrine effect. So if you decrease the glucagon production by the alpha cells in the islets, ultimately insulin secretion improves. So the idea that the byproduct of the proglucagon gene, GLP-1, modifies insulin secretion, it may be an indirect effect of modifying glucagon secretion successfully. So they're called GLP-1 receptor agonists because they bind to GLP-1 receptors, and ultimately in the islet really have a tremendous benefit on increasing insulin secretion. But, you know, the benefits in the vascular tree are a little bit more problematic. As far as I know, in the heart, there are no GLP-1 receptor agonist receptors, except maybe in the sinoatrial node. And you'll be able to tell me much more about that, Chris. But, you know, these drugs work mostly from a metabolic perspective. And although the benefit in heart failure is not clearly demonstrated for these agents, ultimately they are presumed to have an anti-atherosclerotic effect. But if you look at the metabolic explanation for the anti-atherosclerotic effect, you have to kind of dig down fairly deeply. I mean, there's effects on ENOS signaling in the endothelial cell. There's probably some modified effect on mechanisms of insulin resistance that may relate to the adipocyte and the liver. But ultimately, in terms of the benefit for the vascular tree, in terms of its major effects on myocardial infarction and other events that we relate to atherosclerosis, I think we still don't know. So to conclude, I'm not quite sure how either of these classes of drugs work, but we have substantial clinical trial evidence to think the cardiologist needs to step up to the plate and be more comfortable prescribing these agents for benefit for people at high risk or with cardiovascular disease.
Well, thanks, Bob. That was great. And we appreciate the fact that we don't fully understand, but the evidence is compelling. Now, how about related to some of what we know about the mechanism and the results of the clinical trials for the cardiologist, who would you say is like the ideal person for a GLP-1 receptor agonist versus an SGLT2 inhibitor?
Well, I think in general, the clinical trials would indicate that the patient with heart failure at high risk for heart failure, maybe having symptoms of diastolic dysfunction, et cetera, would be a tremendously appropriate candidate for an SGLT2 inhibitor. The other thing, you know, the modest weight loss, a slight fall in blood pressure, I mean, these kind of pleiotropic effects make this patient with type 2 diabetes, who often exhibits some of this phenotype, would be a good candidate. I think the patient with more an atherosclerotic burden, let's say a previous myocardial infarction or thrombotic stroke, maybe with peripheral vascular disease. And I think one who would benefit more from weight reduction. I did mention earlier that I think the GLP-1 receptor agonists are better drugs for weight reduction than the SGLT2 inhibitors. And that probably relates to the fact that these drugs may, in fact, delay gastric emptying, have an effect on satiety, and may actually shut down appetite-driven food intake in the brain directly. So I think, again, we don't understand if these are anti-atherosclerotic drugs, but I would say the patient with more of an atherosclerotic risk and less so on the diastolic dysfunction or heart failure side of the equation would be given a GLP-1 receptor agonist by choice.
Great. And if I could just ask you to give the single most important message to the practicing cardiologist as the president of the American Diabetes Association to wrap up our podcast.
Well, Chris, I think if the cardiologist is going to be increasingly comfortable in this space of new agents that are really, again, FDA approved for the treatment of diabetes for their use in cardiovascular disease prevention, I think ultimately they got to get comfortable with the adverse effects. And I think for the SGLT2 inhibitors, these are things like ketoacidosis developing at a much lower level of plasma glucose. Also, there may be some issues that relate to genital infections. And I think for women, that's more of an issue than men. And I think, you know, these are the kinds of things that many cardiologists don't want to deal with. So my suggestion for actually both classes of drugs, because the GLP-1 receptor agonists need to be titrated in terms of dosage escalation. People get a lot of GI side effects if you go too quickly. So my advice to the cardiologist is this. If you're going to take on this area of medicine seriously, which I think you need to, I think adding a certified diabetes educator to your practice makes a lot of sense. She or he can really be helpful in dealing with the issues that relate to diabetes. And even you might want to take on patients who are on basal bolus insulin if you have a certified diabetes educator. You don't want to manage diabetes in the cardiology clinic, but ultimately with an educator who's there with you, that can be very helpful in assessing the relative benefit, but particularly the adverse effects of some of these medications.
Well, great. Well, thanks again, Bob. That was terrific. We really appreciate your sharing your wisdom and your broad perspective on this critical topic of improving care of patients with cardiovascular disease and diabetes.
Great, Chris. It's great to be with you. It's good to renew our relationship, which I don't think has ever been totally lost over the 3 decades or so since then.
Thanks, Bob.